Meditieren, Yoga, Joggen, nichts entspannt mich.
Echt? Mich entspannt meine Steuer total.
Steuer? Wie Finanzamt? Die Steuererklärung?
Ja, ich habe ganz locker über 1000 Euro zurückbekommen.
Hast du geheime Connections?
Nö, nur die Wieso-Steuer-App.
Wow, und das ist einfach?
Klar, die macht fast alles automatisch.
Plötzlich fühle ich mich so entspannt.
Hol dir dein Geld zurück. Tiefenentspannt mit Wieso-Steuer.
Stu does America.
All right. The Race is available now wherever you get your podcast. You can find it under the Stu does America stream. Absolutely free. We're going to be updating this as we go a lot forward in the election quite a bit. Something fishy is going on with Karine Jean-Pierre. Yeah, we're investigating. Find out the truth for yourself. A new video available at youtube.com/StuDoesAmerica. Be sure to subscribe to the channel and hit the bell for notifications. Auto expert Paul Bryan is here to help me figure out what exactly is going on as far as the death of the electric vehicle industry. Michelle Obama made an announcement that could have a very real effect on the future of my finances. I will tell you what she said. But we start by doing Super Tuesday 2024. Yeah, we're here. And honestly, it was supposed to be really exciting, and it's not. Now, I'm not going to say there's no excitement in today. For example, we found out that Trump won the North Dakota Republican caucuses already. So, yeah. There you go. I was on the edge of my seat. I didn't know if he would pull that one off, but he did. Where are we and what are we looking at today? Let's go through it. Trump is poised to dominate Super Tuesday as Haley makes her last stand. And that is what it is. I mean, it's hard to make a last stand when you're already like, you know, they're already shoveling dirt on your campaign. Hard to make the last stand, but she's trying to do it today. Nikki Haley's fate on the line as Super Tuesday kicks off. And that's I would say a more accurate picture of where we are, because her fate is interesting, right? It's not just that she's not going to win this nomination, but you know, she has a path forward that is going to be a fascinating one to see, just personally and her career wise. I don't think it's going to be she's not going to be in the cabinet this time. She's not going to be the ambassador again. But where she goes from here is kind of interesting. In case you were wondering, though, you probably have tuned out of this race, and that's understandable. It's like I remember that run of Super Bowls back in the 80s and 90s where it was like, you know, San Francisco was winning 55-10. And I think Dallas won one of the games 52-17. And it was the, you know, Chicago Bears 46-10, all those Super Bowls. And they were just all blowouts. And you get all pumped up for the game and then you get that. And that's kind of where we are now with this particular primary. Like people got pumped up for it and we really didn't get any juice out of it at all. In case you tuned out, what is the state of the race right now? Well, here we go. Republican national nomination, the polling 79-15. That's where we are. You're getting a lot of coverage from Nikki Haley. If you're watching CNN, you're watching MSNBC, but this is not actually a race right now. Who's ahead in key race metrics, according to 538? Well, you can see, and they have this little fancy chart here with the heads spread apart. You see national polls about 80-10 in their poll. Endorsement points are way, the heads are far apart from each other because this is a blowout race. Who's ahead in the national polls? You see the trajectory and you might say, well, maybe Nikki Haley's making a run. She's been getting a lot of attention lately. That's true, but is she making a run? And no, here it is. 78-16 is the poll average, but you see the increase really for Donald Trump after the first votes are cast. He picked up basically everybody that dropped out of the race, with the exception of maybe Chris Christie, who went to Nikki Haley. And Politico put together a cheat sheet of the results today. So let's look at kind of what we have to expect. And there is a lot here. I'm not going to go through all of it. 6 p.m., you get an Iowa Democratic caucus. Again, you may know who's going to win the Democratic caucus. We'll get to that here in a second. You have two key Haley tests at 7 p.m., Vermont being one of them. In Massachusetts, the other. The results start pouring in at 8 p.m. You get the about halfway through, 8:30 p.m. Texas gets called for Biden and Trump at 9 p.m. That's what the political headline is for 9 p.m. Texas gets called for Biden and Trump. Like there's no doubt at all. Final state Haley could be competitive in, which is Utah. We'll see. I don't think she's going to be that competitive there. And then California, of course, at the very end of the night, but really doesn't make any difference. And Alaska after that. So there's 16 contests, 15 states, and the best Samoa, American Samoa, which, by the way, realized today is you know, not really close to us. It's almost all the way to Australia and New Zealand. That's where that is, in case you were wondering. I know I was. I was like, where is that place? And then I had to look it up on the map. It is not very close to us at all. Now, Super Tuesday may underline Trump's transformation of the GOP, is the headline from CNN. And I guess that's true. Like, it may do that for you if you need an underline. But I have news for you. It's already his GOP. It's been his GOP since when, honestly? Like, 2016, he's running for president. There's a lot of opposition. He gets the presidency, becomes president. There's still some lingering opposition inside the party, hangs around for a while. But yes, you know, Mitch McConnell is occasionally critical. Yes, Mitt Romney says some things. But, like, that stuff gets really blown out of proportion. This has been Trump's party for many, many years. Even throughout the January 6th process, you had some people being critical. But the fact that this guy was able to still land the nomination and get all these endorsements before any votes were even cast shows he's got a stranglehold on the party. You might think that's fantastic. You might think that's terrible. It is, however, reality, and reality doesn't care what you think about it. That's kind of where we are. Haley, you know, it's interesting because people said, hey, why is Haley staying in? And it's a great question. We'll get maybe into that here in a second. The other side of that question, though, is why would she drop out? She's the last one in. She can pick up some delegates. She can do some stuff. Maybe a miracle happens for her. And that's kind of the path that she's taken. It was always a very overwhelming long shot, 25, 30, 40 to 1. But, you know, it's 0% if you drop out, so why not hang around till Super Tuesday, see what happens? She had enough money to do it. The problem with the way these rules are set up, and we went over this weeks ago when she was making this decision, but to remind you about this, Haley can't even get a ton of delegates today. Why? Well, because the way the rules are set up, and the rules are really, really difficult for Nikki Haley. She has to overwhelm rules that just are not palatable to her in this particular race. Let me give you a couple of examples. If I go through my little Republican primary Bible here. Republican primary in California. Now, California, you think, is a state where maybe Nikki Haley could do pretty well. A lot of moderate Republicans in California. There's also a lot of really conservative ones who like Donald Trump, but maybe this could be a place where Nikki Haley could do well. You could see her doing well in California. The problem in California is it's a winner-take-all state if the candidate gets 50%. And now, in a normal primary, that's not always a huge factor because you have five or six candidates, but, you know, going for votes. Some get 5%, some get 10%. That chips away, so it's really hard for the winner to get 50. And so you have a nice split of the delegates, and you can kind of churn that way. That was the ideal situation for Nikki Haley here, to kind of churn, get 30% of the vote, have, you know, maybe DeSantis or somebody else who sticks in the race, Chris Christie, whoever it is, sticks in the race for a while and keeps chipping away. So Trump, you know, is winning these primaries maybe, but he's winning them with 42% and 41%. And you can kind of split the delegates up. That's not what's happening now. Now there's only two candidates in the race. I mean, even Ryan Binkley dropped out, guys. I don't know if you caught that news, but Ryan Binkley is gone. He's no longer in the race. So now you have basically just two major candidates here going up against each other. And so whoever wins gets 50%. And that is the case in California and where's the other one? Big one here. Texas. Texas now has 47 statewide delegates, 114 congressional district delegates. That's three per district. The overwhelming majority, of course, will go to Donald Trump. And, you know, it is a situation where there's multiple states where this happens. In fact, the majority of the states where this has happened. And honestly, Haley would have. It's unlike Ron DeSantis, who you could make an argument if it was a one-on-one with DeSantis. DeSantis is taking all the anti-Trump vote and then some of the Trump vote. And in one-on-one battle, maybe he can make inroads. That's not the profile of Nikki Haley as a candidate. She's only getting the anti-Trump vote. So in that case, if you're Nikki Haley, what you actually want is three or four candidates in the race so you can stay competitive and at least be floating around that second place territory. Not going to happen for her. Now, I will tell you, normally, when we come up to a big day like Super Tuesday, I am in front of my computer for days and days and days and days and putting together all sorts of projections on delegates and percentages and, all of that. Frankly, this one was too boring. You know, my kid had a Little League tournament this weekend and they made it to the finals. And that was my whole day on Sunday and my whole day on Saturday. And you know what? First of all, more important than your stupid Super Tuesday. But secondly, and maybe more appropriate here, it didn't seem like the work was worth it. This race is over, right? And That's just the way I think that's reality. It's much more important, I think, at this point to focus on Trump's legal wranglings, for example, than it is to talk about these votes. And this is kind of the last day we're probably going to do it, so I will give you this anyway. I will say I was happy to hear that Steve Kornacki did put together basically the work I would have done anyway, so we're just going to give him credit and show you his work. This is a best-case scenario for Trump delegates, and if you kind of look at this, you'll see, maybe Nikki Haley gets 8 delegates in Texas, maybe another 14 in North Carolina, Virginia, 6, Arkansas, maybe 1, Colorado, maybe 10. Most states, as you see on this chart, according to Steve Kornacki, basically, there's a good chance that Trump wins every single delegate. Now, that's not the best case for Nikki Haley. Obviously, that's kind of the worst case for Nikki Haley. But this is what the best case for Nikki Haley looks like. Okay, she gets, 15 in Texas, 19 in North Carolina, 14 in Tennessee. Maybe she gets 27, actually gets the victory in Virginia. She might very well win Massachusetts, is at least theoretically possible. She could get 40 there, another 14 in Minnesota, 16 in Colorado, 6 in Kansas, and she could potentially win Vermont and get 17. But when I say best case scenario, I'm really like meaning best case scenario, right? This is a situation where honestly, like these things are probably not going to happen. And let me, if you happen to be out there and be like, I'm a huge Nikki Haley fan and I think she is going to win Vermont. Well, you can do very well for yourself if you can get yourself on Polymarket, which is one of the prediction markets that we talk about from time to time. Here are the percentage odds, according to Polymarket, that Donald Trump will win each state. Alabama, 99.9%. Arkansas, 99.9%. Tennessee, 99.8%. Texas, 99.8%. North Carolina, 99.8%. Oklahoma, 99.8%. California, 99.4%. Maine, 99%. Alaska, 98.7%. Utah, 99.3%. Virginia, 97.7%. Colorado, 97%. Massachusetts, 97%. Vermont, 87%. So you got like a 13% chance that she's going to pull off Vermont. And you keep that in mind as you watch the results pour in. I know you're going to be locked to your television screens tonight. Now, the question with Nikki Haley is, that's kind of interesting is, should she have abandoned this whole run weeks and weeks ago? There's an argument for it, but only if her preference was to stay in the good graces of the MAGA crowd. And she does not seem to be concerned with that. And honestly, like that, it shows in her approval rating. I want to show you this. And, you know, people think of Nikki Haley, the MAGA people hate Nikki Haley. Well, do they? They certainly didn't up until somewhat recently. Donald Trump, you see his approval rating very, very, his net favorability rating, technically, very, very consistent from right around 65 to a low of maybe 55. Really, the last 4 years have been very consistent for Donald Trump. Now, Nikki Haley was never as popular as Donald Trump, but she started this favorability tracking at about plus 40. Now, Trump is plus 60, but, you know, she's plus 40 at the beginning of her run and just has really just disintegrated. Now she's only plus 3.4%. Essentially, she has taken away all of the goodwill that she has with Republican, at least MAGA level voters, and her popularity has suffered. Her future is something else, right? Now, a lot of people who are Haley supporters will tell you, I think with some good reason, that if she did make it to the general election, there'd be a good chance she would win. It would be difficult for Joe Biden to beat her. Now, is that true? You never know. As the media takes a hold, who knows? They would call her Hitler just like they call him, Donald Trump, Hitler. But Trump, of course, has some unique challenges when it comes to winning general elections, not winning primaries. He's very well suited to win Republican primaries. But to win general elections, he's a very divisive figure. And of course, everyone you talk to who's a huge Trump fan will tell you that, number one, everyone is coming after him all the time, often unfairly. He doesn't get treated fairly. And number two, a lot of people just hate him. They hate him for no reason. It's crazy why they hate him. They don't have a good reason to hate him. Well, I think, like, you, of course, can argue either one of those points, but the bottom line is, I think, generally speaking, both of those things are true. Like, I think Donald Trump does get treated unfairly quite often. He does have the media on his case all the time. He does have the DOJ cracking down against him. And also, in addition to that, a lot of people do just irrationally hate him, right? Like, they hate him just because of who he is, and they're never going to change their mind. But those two things are a difficult foundation to build a general election campaign on. kind of boring Republicans have done relatively well over the years when it comes to presidential elections and elections in the Senate and the House. I mean, a lot of times I think we focus on how much losing is going on. But, you know, if you go back to 2014, for example, before Donald Trump was even on the scene, Republicans were in a really pretty good situation. They had lost to Donald Trump with a really, like, you know, sort of liberal candidate in Mitt Romney. That didn't work. But they had 57 seats in the House, or excuse me, in the Senate, and a big majority in the House. They had governors all over the place. I mean, there was a lot of success in that era. And sometimes, general election wise, that's a good profile for a candidate. So could Nikki Haley win? Yeah, you know, certainly, possibly. And I don't know where these voters for Nikki Haley go. They don't seem to like Donald Trump. Some of them will probably come home to Trump. Some of them will probably go third party. Some of them may even go to Joe Biden. But, you know, there's nothing wrong with picking a candidate that has a maybe more difficult road in a general election. I mean, I certainly do it all the time. I never think about how they're going to do in the general election. I care about what the candidate says, what they believe, and whether they'd be the best president or not. I think that's how you should cast your vote, but that's just me. A lot of people can factor in the electability of a candidate. I don't think it's the number one reason people vote, but it is something you could factor in. But it's up to primary voters to make this decision. This is why you have primaries, right? It's up to these primary voters to make this decision as to whether they prioritize something like electability or a set of issues. I mean, because for a lot of people, if you got Nikki Haley and she won, and the fact that you'd be throwing tens of billions of dollars or hundreds of billions of dollars at the Ukraine war, for example, isn't an acceptable choice. And that's okay. That's what primaries are for. Now, on the Democratic side, there's not really much. The only real narrative is the Israel-Gaza protests. How much will that weigh on them? Administration officials have now admitted they've watered down Kamala Harris's Gaza speech before delivery. She had that, like, delayed thing. She was like, "We are calling for a ceasefire! Yay! For 6 weeks!" Which is the thing that's on the table right now. Oh! Because they don't want a ceasefire. What they want, well, number one, what many of them want are no Jews to be alive. But secondarily, what they seem to want is a everlasting ceasefire, at least on the Israeli side. Now, if there's going to be a bunch of rockets firing in from Islamic Jihad or Hamas, that's totally fine. That they don't really need to have a ceasefire on their side, but Israel needs the ceasefire. That's how that works. Biden is now being shielded from protests. They're doing everything they can to not give people schedules. They're putting up barriers. They're doing everything they can. And even AOC is now AOC is among the least friendly people to Israel. That's the absolute kindest way I can put that. In Congress, in our government, in public life. But she is even being criticized. Ocasio-Cortez lashes out against anti-Israel protesters, demanding she say the word genocide. Let me just show you the clip here real quick. Here's AOC coming out of a movie theater. An Alamo Drafthouse, by the way.
"You refuse to call it a genocide in front of everybody.
I need you to understand.
It's not okay that there's a genocide happening. You're not actively against it.
You're lying.
Then just say it's a genocide. Just say it. Over 30,000 people are dead, AOC. You can't just say it for once. Just say the word. That's it. That's all we want you to say.
Cut it, and you're going to cut this, and you're going to clip this so that it's completely out of context. I already said that it was, and y'all are just going to pretend that it wasn't over and over again. It's f***ed up, man.
You
you're not helping these people,
TV.
And you're not helping them.
You refuse to.
You're not helping them."
I have a weird sense of sympathy for AOC here, because what else can she possibly do to degrade the Israeli cause? What else can she do? She's been anti-Israel the entire time. She has done a lot to try to destroy this country and the people in it. So what else do you expect from her? I mean, the same thing with Biden. Like, they're like, "Oh, well, these protesters might protest him because he's so pro-Israel." What world are you watching? The one where Kamala Harris was just on stage saying she wanted a ceasefire? Was that the world we're talking about? I don't see her as pro-Israel. I don't see him as pro-Israel. I don't see that at all. I don't know where they're getting this from. I mean, I feel bad for them. They're like, "Hey, we're being as anti-Semitic as we can. I mean, gosh, guys, get off our back." There's going to be Oscar protests potentially for the pro-Palestinians going there as well. That's this weekend, by the way, in case you had a life and were not aware of that. It's weird they're putting fences up around, because my idea was fences don't work and they're racist. So for some reason, apparently in this case, they're okay. A UN report is finding convincing information that hostages in Gaza were raped. But let's make sure we have the pro-Palestinian protesters featured everywhere we can to draw attention away from that disgusting fact. Finally, let me give you this. This is, and it comes with a slight word of warning to conservative optimism here. Here is Situation Room, Wolf Blitzer, talking to David Chalia about the gaps in numbers between Biden's 2020 and today.
These latest poll numbers are not necessarily showing a lot of good news for the current president.
No, it's showing a similar story that we've been seeing over the course of the last year. He is losing ground with some key constituencies. Take a look on the screen here. You can see the New York Times Uh-oh. Poll there on the left Uh-oh. Compared to the 2020 exit polls. Now, one is a poll and one is voters coming out of the voting booth telling us what they did. But nonetheless, those under 30, Biden has a 12-point advantage in this poll. Well, it was twice that in the 2020 election.
Uh-oh.
Among female voters, Biden is tied with Trump in this New York Times poll this weekend. He had a 15-point advantage. You see with black voters, he's got a 43-point advantage. That's substantial, except in the 2020 election, it was a 75-point advantage. And then if you look at non-white voters without a college degree, you see he's got a 6-point advantage over Trump, but that was a 46-point advantage in 2020.
Not so good if you happen to be the president of the United States. And I will say this, there's one of two things happening here. We are either having a real realignment of our politics. And I think there's some evidence to support that. I think that, you know, the Republican Party is becoming more populist and attracting voters who are different, right? They used to have the college-educated suburban white voter was a cog for the Republicans for, you know, many decades. And now it seems like they might be fading away a little bit, and you're having more working-class people who are joining the party. It could be a realignment. Maybe that's just what's happening. The other thing is, and to make you a little worried, is if you're building the foundation, remember, these are polls that showed, you know, Joe Biden down by 4 or 5 points, not a massive difference in the polling, certainly within the margin of error. And if you're building the foundation of a tight victory on groups that are never reliable for you, that can be a problem. Because a lot of times they find ways to justify, you know what, maybe I was wrong to consider this 6 months ago. I'm going to go with the guy I always vote with. African-American vote has been with the Democrats for a very long time. They're very reliable. If Donald Trump wins enough to only make the gap 40 points, look, he's going to win the election. There's no doubt about that. Is that real, or is this a temporary thing that's going on right now? That's really the question of this election right now, and it's going to be the question we're trying to answer over the next, what, 7, 8 months? Jeez, we have 8 more months of this. Please let something interesting happen. We're going to come back with Paul Bryan coming back in a couple of minutes about electric vehicles and how they are going down the tubes. That starts next. Constitution Wealth is the Patriots' choice in wealth management. Why invest your retirement funds in woke businesses when you could be aligning with your values? Your investment money and your values should be aligned, right? This is why you want Constitution Wealth. They can help you build a solid investment plan because you have to retire someday, and you can reduce your investments in ESG and DEI and CEI and all those three-letter acronyms nobody wants. You can reduce your investments in those woke corporations and in so doing help to fight the culture war with your most powerful weapon, your money and your voice. This is your opportunity to build the parallel economy by working with an investment firm comprised of professionals who are patriots just like you. Work with an advisor who shares your conservative patriotic values. Why work with anyone else? So if you have $250,000 or more of stock and bond investments and would like to reduce your exposure to woke companies, go to constitutionwealth.com/stew. constitutionwealth.com/stew. Get a consultation today. You're going to really enlighten yourself onto a bunch of ideas you may not have thought of before. It's constitutionwealth.com/stew.
Kaffee in seiner besten Form. Mit Cubo wird jeder Kaffee auf Knopfdruck zum Genussmoment. Denn mit der neuen Cubo One Kapselmaschine von Chibo genießt du feinsten Spitzenkaffee aus besonderen Anbaugebieten. Vollmundige Aromen dank innovativer Press-Brew-Technologie und über 17 Sorten Kaffee für jeden Geschmack. Erlebe Premium-Kaffee schon ab 29 Euro. Entdecke jetzt die Cubo Kapselmaschinen in deiner Chibo-Filiale und auf chibo.de.
I'm happy to welcome back the great Paul Bryan to the program. He's an Emmy Award-winning automotive expert and the editor-at-large for Car Coach Reports. Paul, how's it going?
It's going well. It was darn near 70 degrees in Chicago, and what can be wrong with that?
Oh, good. We bring on the global warming, Paul. Bring it on. Believe me, I want more of it. I wanted to bring you on because I've been fascinated by this change, and I know you watch everything in the auto industry so closely. This change in sort of messaging to the public about what's going on with electric vehicles. We've been told forever that every company is going to be switching over to all electric, you know, by whatever it is, 2030. But we're starting to see a lot of messages come out from these companies. Maybe we're not going to go that far. I want to start with this one for Mercedes-Benz. And one word really struck me in this. They said that they were going to say, they initially said that 2030, they were only going to sell electric vehicles. They are now saying that it might be in 2030, instead of 100%, only 50% electric vehicles, a massive cut. And they say this, it's not going to be 100% in 2030. Here's the key word, obviously. Like, they're no longer even trying to give you the optimism that it's possible at this point. What is going on?
What's going on is a healthy dose of basic economics. They're finding out that the panacea that they thought was going to be the electric car and the adopters who were going to be buying them have not only leveled off, but they have actually taken a drop down. And it's, you know, all of a sudden they're saying, hey, guys, we are still selling a small percentage of what we're doing. And as much as we would like to have, you know, this is Mercedes-Benz. I mean, my gosh, to have all of their production in the wink of an eye in terms of automotive years. 6 years is nothing in the car business. And for them to say, you know what, we better have a backstop plan because we're just not getting the action that we're seeing and the adoption. Why? For a vast array of numbers, infrastructure, capacity, the amount of early adopters seems to have leveled off. There were a lot of people who said, gee, I got to have that. It's the latest thing. It's the newest thing. And then they get the reality of living with it. And then they find out that, well, charging, unless you're charging at home, which excludes many condos, many apartment buildings, maybe even public parking spaces that don't allow charging, is still a big, big challenge, irrespective of what the administration says.
Yeah, it's really fascinating to see how widespread this is. And I, you know, I've known people who have bought, you know, Teslas and stuff, and were excited about them and liked them for a little while, and then realized, well, there's this problem with it and this issue, and I'm having this problem with it. A lot of them are like, can't wait to get back into a gas-powered car. And it, sure, just, it seems like that's not just anecdotal. You know, Tesla is saying the company is bracing for significantly lower sales growth in 2024. Of course, Rivian and Lucid have had all sorts of problems. I wrote down these stock prices of these electric vehicle startups are just catastrophes, Paul. Lucid is down 95%. Rivian is down 94%. Nikola is down 99%. And I guess the highlight for the electric vehicles is Polestar, only down 91%. This is sort of a catastrophe.
99%. But it's not 99%.
Much better, Paul.
Yes. I mean, we have to look at the bright side of things. Yeah, they're in a bad, bad economic position on these vehicles. A lot of people are hanging on by their fingernails trying to say, can we get a cash raise? Can we still save this? I saw a fellow with a Lucid Sunday at a charging station, which my weekend run just simply up to Road America to the racetrack, 150 miles, and I had a Kia EV9. Well, the range on that is about 225, 230, and that practically. And so I was recharging, and you seem to want to watch the range gauge more carefully than you want to watch the speedometer or anything else that's going on. I said, hey, how's it going? Obviously, you've spent a boatload of money on this car. And he said, well, it's a good looking car. And I said, yeah, it really is a handsome car, but it's nothing that a V6 turbo wouldn't cure. He said, I got to tell you, I have thought of that many, many times. You know, it just gets to be a hassle. And from an infrastructure standpoint, just finding level 3 chargers is really, really tough. And on top of that, you can't get a roller dog, you know, and do that. They don't have those.
It really does seem just a difficult.
That was a joke, Stu.
Yeah, no.
not much of one.
Let me move over to, I think, maybe the worst sign of all of this, in a way, is Apple. Apple has been kind of behind the scenes been pitching this eventual iCar of sorts, where they're going to come up with their own electric vehicle system. And they've been working on it for a really long time. And
16.
I think, like, what's fascinating about them is, like, they have a streaming. I was just talking to a friend about this. They have a streaming video business where they churn out, like, 5 shows a year that are all massively expensive. And, like, I don't know, it just seems like it's a prestige business. It's like, hey, they get to talk about it in their executive parties. Because, I mean, comparing it to the iPhone, right? Like, it's nothing. They have money. They can just blow money as much as they want on streaming programming. And it doesn't even matter. They have this situation going on with the car, which they could continue to throw money at and not worry about, given the size of their multi-trillion-dollar company. And even they are looking at this and saying, you know what? Maybe this isn't worth it. Why is this all happening?
Well, I think they've discovered that building a car is a heck of a lot more difficult than building a phone. And they make a darn nice phone. I've got it myself, and I use them all the time. And I use an iPad, and I'm on an iMac. But when you start working on something as complex as an automobile or a truck, it's a whole different bag of worms. And they thought that they might pick off a couple of people. They hired an engineer from Ford Motor Company to head the engineering part of it. And it's just remarkably different. The planning stages on cars, even the stuff that we are seeing today as brand new cars, that happened. That's so 7-8 years ago in terms of the automobile business. It's just more difficult. And I think somebody finally made the decision to say, look, why don't we stick to our core business and do this? And on top of that, everybody was saying, look, the sales numbers that we're seeing don't justify what's going on. And it's not on an uphill climb. The manufacturers are in a tough, tough spot. They have a choice of either getting fined by the government for not producing electric vehicles, or they get to pay to a company like Tesla for carbon credits. And they're kind of damned if they do and damned if they don't. And they're going to pay one way or the other. And we've seen most recently, I think the best example might be the F-150 Lightning, where, you know, they were all ganged up for 3 shifts. And boy, we're going to go. And we've got so many reservations. They're down to 1 shift on the F-150 Lightning. And it's a darn nice truck, but, you know, people just aren't buying them. Yeah. You can drive by car stores in the Dallas area, and you'll see tons of Mach-E Fords, and the dealers that I talk to, and the sales numbers bear it out, they're selling regular vehicles, ICE vehicles, if you're internal combustion. And sitting over here on the side is a big supply of Mach-Es. We had thousands of dealers begging the administration to ease up on these regulations that are being forced upon them, even to the point where there were Buick dealers, a significant number of Buick dealers, who said, look, we'll give up our franchise. There's no sense in us keeping the doors open if this is all you're going to give us to sell. It's market driven. It's not hard to figure out, but the government, of course, always finds a way to mess it up.
Yeah, you said it, damned if you do, damned if you don't. Like, that could be like the slogan for Bidenomics. That's kind of like, I think you should use that in the campaign, Paul. You're writing copy for him as we go. Paul, thanks so much. Emmy-winning, automotive expert, editor-at-large of Car Coach Reports. Dude knows everything about cars, and I always go to him whenever I can because, Paul, you just...
How's your car doing, by the way? Are you still enjoying?
I am very much enjoying my car. Yes, my car it is not electric, and it gets very low gas mileage, and I absolutely love it.
I'll ask you one quick question.
Yes.
Is the interior leather?
It is, and it's nice. I very much like it.
How do you know it's leather?
I don't know. They told me on the sheet.
And thereby, we're going to set up our next visit.
Ah, interesting. All right. We've got some intrigue, a little cliffhanger from Paul Bryan. Paul, thanks so much for coming on the program, man. I appreciate it.
Thanks. Okay. Good to be with you again.
Do you remember a time when vital medications didn't get rationed in the United States? That seems like something that is, I don't know, obvious. It happened in other countries, maybe, and we were happy that it didn't happen here. But now we're in a different time, right? Paul just mentioned my car. Supply chain issues have affected us all, including everybody who's tried to buy a car over the past couple of years. This is just one reason why you need to have a Jace case on hand. It's a personalized emergency medication kit that contains 5 essential antibiotics, which treat the most common and deadly bacterial infections. It's customizable. They have dozens of add-on medications available, so you can choose the ones that best fit you and your family's needs. You can get gift cards to buy a kit for someone else that you love. And look, as we have kind of crazy times here, Glenn was talking about this on radio today. Who knows what is in the future, especially until we get to, you know, January of next year. Be prepared for whatever crazy stuff is going to come down the pipe. Jace is simple. You go online, you fill out a form, you get a prescription, and you get the life-saving medications delivered right to your door. Jace Case can give you peace of mind so that you're not just hoping you have access to medication in an emergency. Go to jacemedical.com, jacemedical.com. Use the code STU at checkout and get a discount on your order. Promo code is STU at jacemedical.com, J-A-S-E medical.com. It's the Jace Case from Jace Medical.
Unsere Empfehlung für deinen Podcast? Frisches Obst und knackiges Gemüse von Aldi. Immer gut, immer günstig, immer vielfältig. Kurz gesagt, frische für alle. Zum Aldi-Preis. Diese Woche Zespri Sangold Kiwi. Das Stück für nur 55 Cent. Oder dunkle Tafeltrauben. 500 Gramm für nur 1,79 Euro. Entdecke jetzt viele weitere Angebote in deiner Aldi-Nord-Filiale. Und weiter geht's. Einfach lauschen und genießen. Aldi. Gutes für alle.
A pretty big piece of news today with Kyrsten Sinema announcing she is not going to run for re-election. She is, of course, currently an independent former Democrat, was kind of in that Joe Manchin category where she was blocking some of the big spending bills and tax bills that the Democrats wanted to pass. She's not well-liked by Democrats anymore because, God forbid, you go one step out of the mainstream, one step out of the narrative, and you're just absolutely obliterated. So now she clears the way, probably helps the Democratic nominee in Arizona there. So we don't know. Of course, Carrie Lake is the Republican candidate going to be running for that seat. We will watch that one closely. Michelle Obama, this is a big one for my financial future. I have a bet, as you know, that Michelle Obama will not be the nominee for the Democrats. And look at this. Michelle Obama's office says the former first lady will not be running for president in 2024. I don't know how many times she has to say this, but she says she supports Joe Biden and Kamala Harris. So there you go. Hopefully this one sticks. The important thing to understand, though, is never believe anyone when they say they're not running for president. So you can't really take too much out of that, but I'm going to take something out of it. Biden is going to form a strike force to go after price gouging. You know, his polls are bad. What's he going to do? He's going to get like a Navy SEAL team to go into your local Kroger. Make sure they're not, you know, raising the prices of Fuji apples too much, I guess. I don't know. We're going to see how that goes for him. It doesn't seem to be working so far. His Bidenomics, we have the, by the way, the cups, Bidenomics Strikes Back, available now at studosmerch.com if you want to get one. But the Bidenomics thing not working at all for Joe Biden. And they're realizing the courts aren't going to save them either. Reality bites Democrats. Courts won't save them from Trump. This has kind of been their idea. Like, what if, you know, like, hey, how are you going to beat Donald Trump? What if we don't have to play Donald Trump? That's a good idea. Like, well, how are you going to beat the Kansas City Chiefs? What if we don't have to play the Kansas City Chiefs? What if we get them disqualified from all the games? What if we have a game on the field and we're the only team that shows up? That kind of seems to be the way that they've been going down here over and over again. But you think of the four major suits against Trump, all of them are in a position that really has been the best for Trump that we've seen in a long time. We will see if that continues. And in a bizarro world update here, we've talked to you about how Joe Biden is apparently too pro-Israel, though I've seen no evidence of this whatsoever. AOC is apparently too pro-Israel. In that same world, somewhere over there, way, way over there, also, what's going on is the New York Times is facing backlash over its coverage of Donald Trump and the 2024 election because they are saying the New York Times is too pro-Donald Trump. What world do you live in if you think the New York Times is too nice to Donald Trump? I can't even, it's incomprehensible that we live in the same world as these people. People who believe that. They believe the New York Times is this like nice, soft voice on, you know, coddling Donald Trump and his. I just don't believe that at all. I'm going to go say that one, boys and girls, is bananas. When you absolutely have to buy or sell a home, and sometimes you just gotta, you know, you need realestateagentsitrust.com on your side. This is Glenn Beck's company, and he started it a long time ago because he was tired of dealing with incompetent real estate agents. If you've ever had an experience with a bad real estate agent, you know how this can go. Bad information, non-responsive, bad price advice, bad repair advice, you know, sending you to the wrong neighborhood, the wrong school system. All these things have bit people in the butt for years and years and years and years. That doesn't happen to you when you have the best agent in the area, but how do you find that person? Realestateagentsitrust.com. They're the best sellers. They know the lay of the land. They know the best practices to get you and your family where you need to go, whether it's across the street or across the country. Most of these agents are fans of the show, so you'll have something in common starting out. Do yourself and your family a favor. Check them out today. It's realestateagentsitrust.com. The name kind of says it all. Realestateagentsitrust.com. A free service to you. It's realestateagentsitrust.com. Remember a while ago, they had those stickers on all the gas pumps, and it was Joe Biden's face, and he was pointing to the price, and it said, I did that. They may be coming back into style pretty soon, because the price of gas is going up quite a bit, in case you missed it, and you may not have seen any coverage of this whatsoever. Gas prices in the U.S. are up ahead of spring break season, and let me show you the chart. You can kind of see it there, but I'll show you a better version of it. The chart shows right here that, yeah, look, the prices are going up considerably. We're down around $3 and up to over $3.35 a gallon. Still not near the peak of the $5 a gallon situation, but they are going up. And this used to be kind of what the main focus was whenever an election season would come around. Like, all of a sudden, everyone would be talking about gas prices whenever a Republican was in power and then a Democrat's in power, and no one mentions it at all. But prices are going up. It's hitting people at the pump. And this is why, you know, for whatever reason, I know they always are mesmerized by this. People don't see Bidenomics as this big success story that the Democrats want it to be. This is part of the reason why the things hit them in the pocketbook over and over and over again. They're things that they see on a daily or, you know, every couple of day basis. And this is really hurting Joe Biden. That, of course, is the good side of it. It should hurt Joe Biden. He's a terrible president. But on the bad side of it, real people are having to deal with these strains on their finances over and over and over again. And it's not going to stop as long as this guy remains president of the United States. Let me tell you about a brand new show. It's called Cooking with the Robertsons. This is available exclusively to Blaze TV subscribers. You got to get on board if you want to watch it. But it's a show featuring Phil and Jace and Al and others showing off their favorite recipes, cooking up a mess of delicious food and dipping into godly wisdom in the way only the Robertsons can. The show is available only if you have a subscription to Blaze TV. So if you don't have one yet, head over to blazetv.com. You can use the code Robertsons30 and save a little extra cash, $30 off your first year. But hurry, the code won't last for long. It's blazetv.com, code Robertson30. Get $30 off your subscription and start streaming Cooking with the Robertsons.